Okay, welcome back, everyone. This is Shuttle Pod at the Disco, episode 9. We're back after a 2-month hiatus.
Woohoo!
We are here to talk about episode 10, Despite Yourself. My name is Brian Drew, and I'm here along with Kayla Iacovino.
Hey, everyone.
Jared Whitley.
Good evening.
And Matt Wright.
Hey, guys.
All right, so, like I said, we will be discussing episode 10 today, which is written by Sean Cochran and directed by our old pal, Jonathan Frakes. But before we get to that, we need to tell you about the awesome peeps over at Bye Bye Robots, who are sponsors of this Shuttlecast and are purveyors of fine art from the future. They sell officially licensed Star Trek art made by multiple artists in many different styles, at prices starting around 25 quatloos. Go to Bye Robot to learn more.
Quatloos, is that from Fizbin? Is that from Piece of the Action? Where does that turn?
No, that's from the Gamesters of Triskelion.
Dang it!
Yep.
Ah!
Yep.
2,000 quatloos on the newcomer.
There we go.
Drill for
no,
all.
Fizbin, so I don't think in a Piece of the Action they even talk about money. I think they cash money. You actually see them playing with actual cash money.
Yeah,
right. Because they're patterned after the Chicago mobs of the 20s, so it'd be
right. So it probably looks like American. Probably looks like dollar bills, American money. Yeah. Anywho, that was a nice little digression there. So like I said, it's been a couple, almost 2 months since we've done a Discovery podcast.
Yeah.
And boy, did the show come back with a bang last night, guys.
Yeah, it did.
So why don't we each give a little quick reaction to how we felt about the show. What do you think, Kayla?
Yeah, I totally agree with you when you say it came back in a big way last night. It's still fresh in my mind, so this may be biasing me a bit, but it's one of my favorite episodes of the season so far. Mm-hmm. Definitely a contender for my favorite episode, just because it was really like a well-put-together story, I thought. Obviously, the directing was fantastic. I love pretty much anything that Frakes directs. I think he's fantastic. The acting was great. I loved seeing the Mirror Universe characters. And it was a little treat to be able to see them in this new universe. We're like, oh, you know, new uniforms, new set design. And it's hearkening back to a universe that we already knew about. So that was a fun treat. And the Captain Tilly stuff was, I was so in love with that whole part of it. I thought that was just fantastic. I love Tilly. And getting to see her do a little bit more and getting to see Mary Wiseman stretch herself a bit in terms of the kind of acting that she's doing was really a lot of fun. So I thought this was a great episode. I can't wait for the next one.
All right. Very cool. How about you, JW?
This is my favorite episode of the season. This was terrific. I had so much fun watching it. It felt more like an episode of Star Trek than anything they've done, including the one with Harry Mudd bouncing around like cause and effect. And part of that is because now we're more comfortable with the crew, and so they feel more normal themselves in terms of what we expect to see. This was terrific. Like Kayla mentioned, it was shot beautifully. I'm consistently impressed, not just with the visual effects, but with the care that is taken into the cinematography, where this is not shot like a soap opera. Like, they really frame each shot so it looks creative and different. And A++.
Nice.
All right. How about you, Matt?
Yeah, I have to echo what everyone else has said. This is on point. This is a great episode. The Mirror Universe is always like fun to kind of look at the evil, you know, flip side of people. So that's always kind of a fun view. And so it was still just as like interesting and fun, and everything was on point. You can tell they're really hitting kind of an apex of really getting comfortable with, you know, what Discovery is and how to shoot it, and the actors, everyone is really just on it.
Yeah, I have to agree with pretty much everything all you guys said. To me it was easily the best episode of the season. I feel like narratively, from top to bottom, it moved really well. It had a sense of purpose. It knew where it was going the entire time. Like, there are times in some of these episodes that we've been watching where the show kind of goes off on tangents and things don't always flow well. I thought this thing flowed beautifully from top to bottom. Frakes did a great job. And knowing he's there guiding it was just a cool thing to know.
Totally.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I agree. Definitely the high point of the season so far. I think so. Consensus opinion is thumbs up from the Shuttle Pod podcast.
Four thumbs up.
Four thumbs. All right, so let's dig into the nitty-gritty of it a little bit. I guess let's talk about how it looked. I mean, obviously, this is not the Mirror Universe that we're used to seeing. This is a far more detailed and elaborate-looking Mirror Universe than we saw in the original series or on Enterprise. The uniforms that the Empire folks wear is almost like armor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With a vaguely Roman
totally
feel.
That's
to
exactly
it,
what
say.
I felt. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was pretty cool. The Empire logo, the Terran Empire logo, is somewhat different, I think, from
it is
the way it looked in the original series.
Yeah, they tweaked it and revised it a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So they took a little creative license there, but overall, I thought it looked pretty cool. What do you guys think?
I have to say, I know some people were saying, oh, they don't. I was expecting in a Mirror Universe episode more sort of sexy uniforms, because typically in the Mirror Universe, especially in the original series, you know, you had midriff and things cut off and ripped. And
none of the men have sleeves on their shirts.
Right, yeah, exactly. Right. So more skin.
Yeah, there's a lot more skin. Yeah. A lot more skin.
But these ones were. But you know what I liked about these is that to me it felt like a Mirror Universe, because the Discovery aesthetic is different from any other Trek aesthetic. And so to me this felt like a Mirror Universe of the Discovery aesthetic.
Which it should have been.
Yeah, mm. Which it should have been. Yeah, I mean, you can argue about how much it fits into canon, but we're kind of over that at this point. I think visually, and so I think I was really happy with it. I thought it worked really well, and I loved the Roman style with the captain's uniforms were awesome, with that big gold piece that would go over the whole top of their body. I thought it looked great.
Mm-hmm. It definitely, I think, gives cosplayers some good material for the future.
I want to know more about what the costumes were made out of, the actual costume part of it that everyone was wearing, because it looked almost rigid.
Yeah, it did.
Or is that
it did.
Just... Yeah, okay.
No.
Yeah, it looked leather, like a stiffer kind of thing.
Hmm.
Not sure, though.
Yeah, and I wonder if they were also manufactured in kind of a 3D fashion, like other things.
Hmm.
I was surprised that they changed the Terran Empire logo at all, to be honest. It doesn't really bother me. I was just surprised, because that's something... it's one thing to change an aesthetic of like a uniform or a set dressing, but a logo is a pretty well-defined thing.
Sure. It has the hallmarks of it.
They did change the delta on the Starfleet uniforms too. Yeah. Even though it's minor, they did change it.
Yeah. And it has the hallmarks that we're looking for, which is like the giant dagger through, something. And
that's true. And I guess you could argue that, the delta symbol of like the Federation logos have changed over history, over time. So in the mirror universe, they're allowed to have their logos evolve over time as well. So this could just be the logo that was used in this 10-year time period.
Maybe.
Oh, okay, so here's something I'm reading on Memory Alpha, which I had no idea about this. You mentioned the Roman stuff. Apparently, in a scene cut from the Enterprise episode in A Mirror Darkly, Archer invoked the blessings of the gods, hinting that the Empire may be a continuation of the Roman Empire. And then Marlena Moreau mentions that Kirk will become another Caesar for the Terran Empire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I'd forgotten that.
Oh, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
That's super cool.
Kirk would have made a good Roman.
Well, yes, and on fact, Bread and Circuses, he did.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Oh, he tells him that too.
Yeah, he literally gets told that.
He?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. You're a Roman Kirker. You should have been something like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
So every time you go into the Mirror Universe, we get to see versions of our favorite characters, the darker versions of our favorite characters, and obviously this was no exception. We learned a lot about Burnham and all the other, not all the characters, but we learned how some of the other characters appear in the Mirror Universe. What did we think about that?
I was surprised to not see Michelle Yao brought back, and I that may just be she they didn't bring her back here, and maybe they'll bring her back in another episode. But I certainly hope we see her.
Well, can we?
I suspect we will.
Yeah, I suspect. Yeah.
I figured people are going to want to talk about this. Maybe I'll just jump right to it since you brought her up. There's a lot of questions about who the Emperor is.
Yeah. Yep.
So mm-hmm. I think Captain Giorgio is a strong contender for that.
Yeah. I was thinking
that
like
surprise me.
Would they well yeah, the other thing I was thinking is in the Enterprise episode what's her name? Hoshi Sato. She uses the Defiant to become the Empress. And I don't know if they would continue that line. I don't know if there's any demand to bring Linda Park back in old lady makeup, but Captain Giorgio would be a great choice too.
Wouldn't she be like way too old?
Yeah, wait, probably, very probably. Yeah. Also, yeah, it seems like there's probably a lot of turnover in that job.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if there's always a marker on your back being a starship captain, I cannot imagine what it's like being the emperor of the.
Oh yeah.
The entire most thing. Definitely. So.
Did everyone else love Captain Tilly?
Yes, that was. I loved it. It was so great.
It was cute.
It was. It was. Yeah, Brian's just like, yeah, it was fine, whatever. I'm just like, Captain Tilly is life. I loved it.
I thought it was delightful. I also like where they read Mirror Universe Tilly's resume, and it's just like one bloodbath after another. And then the best part is the stupid pun, Captain Killy, and Sarah goes out of his way to point out that it's a stupid pun. I like that.
But she did great. She felt, you know, the character of Tilly fell right into her role. At first, she was, you know, obviously a little bit like a bumbling and not quite sure what to say.
Yeah.
I love how she, like, she keeps looking to Captain Lorca when she's not quite sure what to say.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she's just, like, thinks of an excuse to hand the con over to him. She's just here's my chief engineer. He can answer your questions. And then, of course, we got the delightful. I thought that we were about to hear
Lucius.
Lorca doing a British accent, but it was close. We got a Scottish accent. That was pretty awesome.
I was hoping he'd do his Lucius Malfoy accent, but the Scottish one, to be fair, because it was such a surprise and so silly, was even better.
Yep.
And there's obviously a little reference there to the chief engineer speaking with a Scottish accent.
Totally.
Mm. Yeah, that was terrific. I also liked, while we're talking about Lorca, I liked his line where he said, I can't imagine we're going to ask any of these neighbors for a cup of sugar.
Right. Yeah.
I'd love to talk about Lorca and Burnham for a minute, because I think...
Sure.
I think it's when you're talking about, you know, their mirror universe counterparts, I think this is a really interesting, there's a lot of development, I think, between the two of them as a, you know, a pair on screen. And I think there was a lot of hints into Lorca's potential, how should we say, clandestine, maybe not sure if it's good or bad actions that he may or may not have taken.
Yeah.
So there's a couple things I think that tip this off for me. One of them is the conversation that Burnham and Lorca are having in his ready room once they're in the mirror universe. And Burnham is telling Lorca, I found out about our mirror universe counterparts. Here's their deal. Here's their story. And he immediately asks about, his old ship.
Yeah. Which oh, sure.
In,
yeah.
The, in the Prime universe, you know, as we know, he, for some reason, blew up the ship with all his crew on it, and he was the only one to survive. So he immediately asks about...
Or at least that's the story.
That's the story, you know, and we're made to think, you know, everyone seems to think it's some nefarious thing that happened, but we're made to think, well, we're not sure if it is. Do we trust that he's a good person at heart, and there was a bigger story there, or... Is he really just a terrible guy? What happened? You know, that's a really, I think, intriguing plot point for me in the whole season. And so when he asked about that, I thought it was interesting. And when she replied that none of them were alive, he looked dismayed and sort of said, oh, and here I thought that we might find better versions of ourselves over here.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Which leads me to think that the Lorca might be a more honorable guy, the mirror Lorca.
Yeah, well, and he's fighting against the Terran Empire.
Exactly.
Which,
yeah. Yeah, so his quote-unquote betrayal is actually, you know, something honorable. The way that Quark is the only good guy in the Deep Space Nine mirror universe.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if we want to dive into the Lorca stuff, because we could talk quite a bit about that. What do you guys think?
There was one line from that scene you mentioned that I wanted to draw attention to, where he talks to... he's talking to... to Michael, and he says, you know, it was destiny that did this and that got you on my ship. And she says, no, it was you that got me on this ship. And it's like, yeah, this kind of subtle way that he's trying to manipulate her, and she's not quite aware of it, of what he's manipulating her for, but he knows that he's maybe being a little dishonest, and so she throws it back at him gently. So I like that exchange.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that the relationship between the two of them seemed to grow in a weird way, though, too, because at the beginning of the episode, after Tyler has that freak out on the worker bee, Lorca goes up to her at the back of the bridge and basically says, you know, something to the effect of, you can stop worrying, because he's fine now. Basically meaning, I know you guys are like a thing, and don't think for a moment that I didn't notice. Yeah, that's what that was to me, was him being
definitely. That was him making her fully aware that he knows.
Yeah, because putting himself back in the position of power over her, being like, I know what's going on. I'm not an idiot.
Mm.
So don't try anything, kind of thing. And then they have some other moments like that, like the one that Jared mentioned, that's like almost touching as the any relationship with Lorca can be, I suppose.
Sure.
So what else do we have, guys?
Well, the other thing about the mirror universe versions of both Tilly and Burnham is that, like our versions, they're very, you know, they're go-getters. Burnham, of course, was a go-getter and, you know, moved right up to sort of second in command in the Shenzhou and then the Prime Universe. And Tilly, while, you know, young and new at all this, has already announced that she wants to make captain, right, in the Prime Universe. And so it's interesting to see, like, okay, the sort of evil, no inhibitions, like, how, you know, no holds barred versions of them. Yeah, they get what they want, and they've gotten it already. Like, Tilly is probably the youngest captain in the, you know, ISS, like, fleet or whatever at this point. Because she just went for it, you know? She was smart, she was cunning, like, whatever. And probably, like, really disarming, you know what I mean? She was probably adorable, right? And then she stabs you, and that's the end of, you know, she moves up a level, you know? And so you can see that this is the ruthless version of all that. And it's kind of fun. It's kind of neat to see, because, you know, they both want to move up, and they're both big, like, movers and shakers. But of course, it's a much different path in the Prime Universe.
They're evil movers and shakers.
Mm.
Right.
They're shakers and movers.
Hey, do you think anyone's going to have a goatee?
I have been wondering that the whole time.
At some point.
Yeah, we know so.
Maybe Mirror Lorca.
Yeah, that's what I would hope.
Well, for sure it's Mirror Sarek, but yeah.
Assuming we see Sarek.
No, we do. You guys don't look at the preview thing, do you?
No, we don't, because we like to avoid spoilers.
Me and Jared do not, happily.
Well, that's not really a spoiler exactly, but there you go. Goatees are around, let's just say that.
Aww. I thought I was being so clever.
Yeah, me too.
So apparently, all Vulcans in the
Vulcan thing, yeah.
Rock goatees.
Because Sol has a goatee. Yeah,
yeah, an Enterprise. So it's a Vulcan thing, apparently. Mirror Vulcans, yeah.
And speaking of Vulcans, something else that we learned last night that seemingly contradicts the established mythology is that apparently the Terran Empire is kind of a humans first kind of organization. Mm. They are a homo sapiens only club.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And that kind of doesn't jive with what we know happens 10 years later when Spock and some of his henchmen are aboard the Enterprise.
Exactly.
So I don't know what that's about and what the deal is there.
The only thing that I can think about this is that it's still true that it's humans first. They're all subjugated, but they're allowed to serve in, you know, lowly capacities for the most part, right? Like, they use them as their lackeys on ships. But of course, that still doesn't explain Spock being second in command. That's still
Spock was first officer on that ship.
That's right. So one of the things we were sort of chatting about today, actually, was maybe it's Spock being half human that gives him some kind of privilege. Right?
Yeah,
maybe it's mostly just Spock.
Because T'Pol, she wasn't first officer on the Enterprise episode, was she? I can't remember.
Yeah, I think she was there too. It doesn't really quite fit, but just thinking, trying to think it through. Anyway, I don't think there's a good answer to that. I think they just sort of went for it, which is okay, I guess. But Yeah.
It doesn't bother me that much.
Yeah, it's kind of all right.
But why add something like that when it's so easily contradicted? Spock was a key character in the episode Mirror Mirror.
Well, Spock...
Yeah, I feel like they wanted a one-sentence explanation for new people or something. You know
that was
I mean? Like,
10 years later, remember, from the point of view of Discovery.
Yeah.
Right, so. But T'Pol was serving as first officer 150 years prior.
No, I think so the Enterprise, it's a bigger deal that there are Vulcans in Enterprise in Mirror Darkly. But I mean, Spock, everyone knows, you know, Spock with the goatee, but you could wave that away by saying, oh, that happens later.
Right. Mm. Well, so there you go. That's kind of.
Yeah. Discovery is built on waving things away.
Yeah.
while also being slavishly devoted to canon.
Yes.
Not canon, but slavishly devoted to aspects of the franchise, such as the.
And fan service.
Yeah, such as basically. The making people speak Klingon. Gosh, I'm so glad there was nobody speaking Klingon last night.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we've been promised fewer subtitles, so I was very glad to read that.
That's good, yeah.
Speaking of people speaking in Klingon in this episode, we may not have gotten that, but we heard a familiar voice in the form of... Can I go ahead and say it? Is it still a spoiler at this point?
It's not, I don't think.
Now, if you're listening to a podcast dissecting an episode of Star Trek,
you've known about this for a while now. All right, everyone, guess what? Ash Tyler is Klingon Vok, and if you are still waiting for them to actually say the name Vok, which they didn't last night, I mean, he spoke in Vok's voice, which I thought was actually really cool. I really liked that.
Oh, definitely.
So all of us knew that was coming. I think. Brian, like you say, probably most people listening to this podcast knew that this was coming. This fan theory has been, you know, if you didn't figure it out on your own by watching the show, the fan theory has been all over the internet. So
including on our site,
TrekMovie.com.
Including a very, very, if for people who aren't hip to this or want to learn more about the origin of the theory and all of the background stuff, it's actually a really, really great article, not to toot our own horn. Although I love to do that, but definitely, yeah, check out the article on TrekMovie.com. Who is Ash Tyler? It goes into the in-universe explanation and the real-world explanation of why that had to be the case. And this was months and months ago when we wrote the article.
Because in real world, there were definitely some breadcrumbs left, not just in-universe, but in the real world.
Some like
kind of
some
put
like
it all together.
Some loaves.
Loaves. Yeah.
Did you come up with that right now?
Yes, I did.
Very clever. If you're in the same room.
Yeah, those weren't breadcrumbs. Those were giant loaves of bread.
On the back. They were loaves of bread.
So,
but they allowed us to do a very detailed forensic analysis and basically determine that Tyler was Vok.
Yeah.
And that has got to be the least surprising plot development since the resurrection of Spock.
Oh, no. I would say since the Into Darkness reveal that John Harriman is actually Khan.
Yeah, John Harrison. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's even worse.
Oh yeah, John.
To be fair, that's worse.
Yeah.
That's a whole other story. But it's actually in some ways it's pretty similar. But at least no one lied to us about it.
Right. Exactly. No one outright lied. Well, I thought that was about time. That was nice that we finally got where we wanted to go with that. It is interesting because, of course, a lot of people pointed to the fact that Tyler was just shown on a medical scan a couple episodes ago, and he, you know, with a full kind of normal human-looking organ complement and skeleton, which is true. He does look fairly normal, but they actually, of course, good old Culber really does do a deep dive and figures this out that, oh yeah, they did a hell of a lot of work on him to make him look human.
Yeah, like I can't remember. Did they mention anything about like? Klingons having redundant organs and like three kidneys.
No,
and stuff
I wish
like
they
that.
Had. Yeah, I really wish they had. But I mean, so apparently, yes, they removed like every redundant organ, reshaped them to look more like the human shapes that they should be. Right.
Crushed his bones.
Right. Yep. Took some height off of him, you know, so he looks more like a normal human height and crazy stuff like that. So there you go. He was drastically, and drastic might even not be a drastic enough word for that, altered.
So we know the Vok is Tyler, Tyler's Vok, but we still don't know the precise mechanism. And that's something I'm really that'll be my big reveal. You know, what I'm waiting to find out is it Vox? Did they really take Vox's body and completely reshape it into look like this guy Tyler, and then they took Tyler's consciousness and put it in there somehow, and then overlaid this other one?
Yeah.
Or is it Tyler's? Supposedly. Is it Tyler's body? Possibly. Is that?
It seems like it is Tyler's body.
So it's something.
Well, but then why all the obvious signs of like height change and
they said every one of his organs has scarring around it. Because at first I thought it's got to be Tyler's body because we know that in the future, in the future, you know, in Trouble with Tribbles, Bones can detect a Klingon that's been made to look human with a tricorder scan. So surely 10 years previously, they wouldn't have had the technology to do this much better, where we know he's been through all these medical scans. So I had assumed it's Ash Tyler's body, and they've somehow implanted Vox consciousness, you know, either biologically or on some kind of computer chip or something, or who knows. And either Tyler's dead or like sort of sleeping underneath Vox consciousness. Mm-hmm. But now they've made it sound like it's Vox body that's been reshaped.
Yes. So they certainly make it pretty clear that it's somebody drastically physically altered. So that's got to be Vok, right? Because Tyler wouldn't need physical alterations. He's already human. And then she's, you know, with Laurel, who we should definitely talk about more about her in a second. She attempted to, you know, trigger the resurfacing, I guess you could say, of Vok's personality. And of course, that doesn't work. We should talk about that too. But so, and Culber even says he thinks that maybe it's a, another personality overlaid, like not, you know, not reconditioned, but like overlaid somehow.
Well, okay. So, can we all point out that he passed the Manchurian test?
Okay, I was going to go there.
So this is sloppy writing shorthand. I mean, it's not sloppy exactly. I don't mean to be rude to the writer.
No, but it's just lame.
But it's shorthand because they're hoping, hey, if we put this pop culture reference in, you guys will all know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And we can move on. And it's like, yeah, but no, that's not a thing. Like, sorry.
Yeah, apparently someone at Starfleet Medical was a big fan of Frank Sinatra's.
Right.
Like, yeah. To be fair, you get...
I know, Richard Condon book, yeah.
To be fair, you know exactly what it means when he says it.
Right.
But
and
also...
And so I understand why they took that sort of shorthand, of course, but...
They could have called it
you know, that's
else.
Not how that works. In real life, that's not how that works. It would be named after the psychiatrist who
made well, the other thing, if we wanted to be overly sensitive, we could say that Manchuria is a region of China which has lots of stuff coming out of it besides brainwashing.
Well, but yes, but it's a specific reference.
I know. It's kind of like...
Get woke, you guys.
It's like, I imagine there are people in Stockholm who would prefer if psychiatrists would come up with a different name for the syndrome.
Yeah, no kidding, right? They'd be like, no.
I thought it was a really goofy
reference.
It kind of called attention to itself, and it kind of underlined the situation in an unnecessary way, and it's like,
I wish they just... They could have come up with better sort of techno babble for it and not shorthanded it. You know what I mean?
Like, what
that
if,
would have been better.
What if the psychiatrist was Dr. Manchurian?
Oh my God, of course. What is this, Spaceballs or something?
No, or is this Captain Proton?
Yes.
Quick, Captain someone Proton. Read a memory alpha entry for Dr. Manchurian. And then it'll be a canon.
Yeah, early 23rd scientist who discovered. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Anyway. So anyway, there's that.
You know what they could have named it after? They could have given it like Dr. Tristan Adams from Dagger of the Mind.
Yeah. That would have been good. Some kind of reference.
And that would have been kind of a deep cut reference that people would have been like, oh,
well, no,
but
that's great because they've already thought of things like having Cadet Decker paged on the intercom. So like, dude, call it after Dr. Adams. That's perfect. Like, that's great. All they need is a little bit of memory alpha research. You know what I mean? And they could have done that. But anyway,
it was a silly nitpick. It's not a big deal, but it did kind of call attention.
It pulled me out of the moment a little bit.
Yeah,
it did. It totally pulled me out.
Agreed. I just sort of chuckled and I was like, really? Okay, cool, whatever. Move on.
So what did you guys think of the whole scene with Laurel and Vok Tyler? Where, as Matt started to say, she tried to activate him and it
with this incantation of the prayer, right?
Yeah.
The Kalesh prayer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was really cool. I really liked that scene a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, so did I.
Very cool.
It was the right amount of Klingon for an episode.
Yeah. Very chilling to hear him speak.
I thought Jonathan Frakes really staged it well.
Yeah, the
Frakes
way
knows what he's doing. That's
the camera, the blocking of like the camera shots was awesome. The acting I thought was fantastic. It was just like a really well put together scene. It was even though, you know, we all knew this reveal was coming, and we see them together in the cell. You know, this probably is going to be the scene where it's coming. It was still like I was still kind of on the edge of my seat watching it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's pretty great when you know what's about to happen and you're still like waiting to hear the next line. You know, that's pretty awesome.
I think that again, I think that's huge. You know, kudos to both Mary Chifo and Shahzad Latif right there. Just really this, you know, real good like electricity between them, right? Like it's really good. Just kind of amazing.
I loved hearing Vok's voice coming out of Latif as Tyler.
That was so freaky and good.
Yeah, it was like, freaky.
Yeah, it was very cool. Yeah, it was very cool. So do we think that she allowed herself to be captured so that she could get on board and trigger him?
I sure hope not.
Yeah. She's been trying to be like one to two steps ahead of everything that goes down around her. So I think so, yes.
And she was trying to get on Discovery.
Yep. She mentioned the Discovery by name very specifically to Cornwell. Yeah.
So I think definitely.
So she's kind of she's kind of his handler then. She's the one who's assigned to like look after him. Yeah.
Well, I mean, she sort of created him in effect. So that makes sense.
Right. But I want to talk briefly about Latif's performance. He was amazing last night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Huge kudos to him.
His performance since he's been on the show has been really good as the characters gone further along and the conflict within him started to become introduced. And last night he had to vacillate between being very confused and having a slight, you know, other influence on him that he didn't understand to being himself. To like he was working. There were a lot of different shades of that character going on last night, and he really did a beautiful job.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was my favorite acting performance of the season. He was so good last night.
Oh, that's nice.
So the portrayal of PTSD, which is what Tyler has been showing up to this point.
So this is interesting. I have some thoughts about this. This is interesting to me because there's sort of a catch 22 with this almost, that it would have been really good in a way if he really was just, a prisoner of war who'd been experimented on or whatever. And we could actually have a good conversation, you know, somewhere about PTSD, right? It could actually be a realistic, you know, portrayal of it, and they could have some real arc with him, you know, starting to recover from it, work on it, and now and all of that sort of out the window now. Like, it's kind of too bad they kind of screwed that over for the sci-fi aspect of it. Now, I like the sci-fi kind of crazy Manchurian-y stuff, sure, but it is unfortunate.
So, Matt, another thing that's interesting about what we do get to see in terms of his journey with PTSD, because as far as we're concerned and as far as the people around him are concerned anyway up to this point, is he's a guy with PTSD. I guess I'm not so impressed with the way that he's being treated as someone who's a POW who's obviously probably going to have PTSD. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just noted in my notes last night, like, why does Lorca keep sending him on these missions where he's going to come in to contact with things that are probably going to trigger him, right?
So this goes back to, I think this goes back to Lorca sort of being blinded to the fact that he wants people that he knows are absolutely loyal to him to do stuff, right? So he wants that over anything else, and he's totally willing to throw, you know, Tyler to the wolves of his own problems.
Right. Well, there's two different, you know, there's a slightly, I might challenge your wording a bit there, because is he blinded or does he just not care?
Well, that's true. I think maybe he doesn't care. Although, honestly, I kind of wonder if it isn't a blinding, because I think it might go both ways, because you'll note that he doesn't seem to have any idea that Tyler's compromised. He doesn't seem to think so.
Yeah.
Because remember, Burnham sort of covered for him. Yeah. And Lorca didn't call her out for covering for him. He called her out for sort of fraternizing while in a tense situation, right? He didn't understand that what she was doing was actually like being a voice of reason, you know, kind of calling him back to, you know, you know, the present sort of instead of his freak out mode. And all he thought was, well, hey, stop talking to your little lover over the comm, you know, in the middle of a thing. Now, maybe that's a cover. Maybe that's his excuse, but it sure doesn't seem like he even recognizes the fact that Tyler is actually quite compromised.
You can't imagine. I mean, because why would he put him in such a high position within his ship and give him so much freedom if he knew that or even suspected that he was some kind of Klingon spy?
Right.
Definitely.
Anyway, yeah, I know a few people today that I know that were a little perturbed about how they kind of just rejected the entire portrayal of PTSD and basically just turned it all into a big plot device.
Yeah,
for the unveiling of Bok.
That's unfortunate.
But if they've talked, remember, about Culber talked about this idea of having one personality on or one consciousness on top of another. So if there's still a Tyler consciousness in there, that consciousness has got to have a hell of a PTSD going on. Right?
Yeah.
So that part of it could still end up being real, right?
I suppose.
Right. I guess it depends who wins.
Can
right?
Vok, like which... can Vok Tyler be separated into Tyler and Vok?
Oh, maybe they should get the guy who did the Tuvix thing to try to help them with that. No, you know, just do it in reverse.
Next week's episode, Vokler.
Yeah. Vokler. Nicely. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that's going to, maybe the character will survive and maybe we will end up having a crew member who's a very weird hybrid of two beings.
Yeah. I kind of think they're going to go kind of more binary. I mean, I actually would think that'd be very interesting, but I have a feeling they're going to kind of go more binary with it and he's going to end up like obliterating one of them. You know what I mean? Like somehow they'll purge one. It's like, okay. Sure,
like the two consciousnesses are fighting in his head, right. And one of them has to win, and yeah,
right. They're gonna set up that kind of dilemma. That's just like, you know, black and white. And it's like, okay.
Yeah, we'll see. There's a lot of things. There are a lot of ways they could go with it.
I agree. I just don't think they're gonna go
with the more interesting way.
Yeah.
We can take bets. We should start taking bets on what we think.
How many Quatlus?
Yeah.
Get your quad loose.
Well, right, here's a thought. Maybe he, because there are appears to be two people in that body, maybe, you know, he's going to obviously be on the Discovery for the next several episodes. Presumably he's not going to get killed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to assume that he will survive to get back into the regular universe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he'll be there. He'll be on the ship. And Vok himself will actually be there eyewitnessing, you know, what's ever going on the ship. Maybe when they go back to the main universe, maybe he will be part of a way of mediating between the Federation and the Klingons.
Yep.
Maybe he'll be the guy that is like, listen, you know, I've been with these humans. They're not, you know, the horrible beings that we think they are, blah, blah, blah. And he would be like, basically the middleman who would establish peace.
I think that's got to be
That's my thought.
That would be good.
Well, because remember, think way back to before Discovery episode 1 even aired. Remember, the whole season is about learning, you know, who is the other and learning to understand the other side. Remember, that was promised from very early on.
We haven't seen anything like that.
Yeah. But if that's the resolution to this, and the Vok Tyler thing is like a huge part of this season's arc, because Vok is at the beginning and that whole thing, and we haven't even heard from the Klingon side of things for a while now. I think that's spot on, Brian. I can't think of any other better way to resolve the entire series. And that's a really Trek way to do it, in my opinion, to say like, you know, yeah, hey, actually, these humans aren't so bad. And like have him try at least. Not saying he'll succeed, but I think the idea of having him try to broker something between the two people is, yeah.
And then at some point he says, I predict at one point in the future we will become fast friends.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Maybe there will even one day be a Klingon Starfleet officer.
Well,
I mean, that goes back to a quick name drop they do at the beginning of this episode. They mention Organia. Apparently the Discovery was right near Organia when it...
Yeah, I thought that was really odd because I'm like, no, you were near Pava, weren't you? Like, I don't.
Yeah,
know.
Right. Because weren't they there with the whatchamacallit, the Pavians, whatever they were called?
Pavians.
Yeah.
But then they jumped, so they could move in space. right?
Yeah, but apparently they were right near Organia.
Yeah.
Well, plus I guess they had been traveling for a while to get to Starbase, whatever. 42 or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
No. They were in orbit of Pavo. They jumped back, defeated the ship of the dead, and then they were like, "Oh yeah, we should get out of here to get to safety." They con Stamets into jumping one more time. He overrides the jump, and they end up in the Mirror Universe. They were right in orbit of Pavo. I have no idea where Organia comes from.
Yeah, but he does mention Organia at the beginning.
He does, and I have no idea why that's right. And that's what I'm saying. I have
He's
no
like,
idea.
Why, where he goes, weren't we in orbit around Organia or something, or near Organia? I forget exactly what how he phrased
so apparently,
it, but they were very clearly near it.
They were, well, right. So apparently all these disembodied spirit people live near each other, right? Like, Pavo lives near Organia. Like, it's like, what? No.
Well, it's like,
come on, you guys.
It's like in the 2009 movie, how Spock, when he's on Vega 2 or whatever is somehow able to see in the sky the destruction of Vulcan,
well,
which would have to be in another solar
it's even
system.
Worse because... Well, yeah, it's even worse because it's not Vega 2, which would be a planet we've never seen before. They recycle a name of a planet we even know. It's Delta Vega.
Delta Vega,
which
that's
where there's dilithium. That's where they maroon.
That's where they try to strand Gary Mitchell.
Yeah, that's where they maroon Gary Mitchell. And it's like, no, you guys, really? Of all names to pick up, they're nowhere near each other, of course.
No, because like, presumably Delta Vega is near the barrier to the galaxy.
Yeah. Near the barrier, yeah, exactly. Right. It's like, no, dude, it can't be. But whatever. There you go.
It's such a nerdy argument to have, like a nerdy discussion that we're having, but I love it so much. It's like, apparently the writers didn't look up the latest star charts.
Yeah.
But it does, that kind of stuff does rub you the wrong way when you're being fed all this bullshit about how writers are, you know, conscious of every little thing, and they study the canon, and they're huge fans, and then they do stuff like that.
For sure.
Like,
no, for sure. No, for sure. I'm totally with you.
Absolutely are not.
Especially the astronomical reality. I mean, every Star Trek fan is going to know if you're in a different solar system, you're not going to be able to see anything in daylight from another solar system.
Oh, God, of course not.
Oh,
right.
Yeah, no. And I don't mean to,
no way. Right.
I don't mean to demean the discussion at all. I just like to and be like,
no,
at some point, if a non-Trekkie was listening to this, it'd be like, what
they think we're ridiculous.
Are they talking about?
Nothing on Earth at all, Kayla.
How could they know that Pavo wasn't near Organia? My God.
Well, there's a star chart on, the captain's ready room that shows us. So there you go.
All right, and you can always look at Larry Nemechek's star chart book, you know?
Yeah, which is what they're using for most of those charts.
There's a plug for you, Larry.
Yeah, there you go, Larry.
Portal 47.
To go back to Gary Mitchell for a second, I think we can segue a little off of Gary Mitchell, actually. And here's how. I think we can come back to Gary Mitchell in a second because we should talk about our dear Dr. Culber's death.
Dear doctor.
I didn't realize that he'd been killed. I guess I wasn't paying very much attention, and I felt kind of dumb because then I read about it on our website afterwards, like, oh, I guess he's dead.
Yeah, they did the old, you know, cracking walnuts sound effect of, like,
he snapped his neck.
Yeah.
He had like a Klingon rage fit basically and snapped his neck.
You should go watch that scene again, Jared. It's actually really, I thought it was really good.
Okay, I will. The thing that particularly annoyed me about hearing that he's dead is I'm finally starting to like the character more. Like when he's talking about PTSD, I'm like, hey, this is good doctor stuff for him, right? This makes him more interesting. Oh, whoops. Yeah. Okay, never mind.
This was his best episode. It was called,
yes!
I thought. This is called
Yes!
Best
episode. Yeah, mm-hmm. I liked it a lot. I liked it for him a lot.
Yeah, he actually did something of substance.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess then we need to ask the question, was it a good death? Or, you know, motivated by the plot? Or do we just feel this was sort of a waste?
I thought it was.
I thought it was a good death. If ultimately it pays off somehow later and it wasn't just, you know, to show what a monster all of a sudden Tyler has become, then it'll be worthwhile. Yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
I think that's the qualification there, Brian. Like you just said. That's the qualification. Since we know that that's kind of a big deal for a few reasons, both sort of in universe and in our world, it's kind of a big deal. A, because like we were saying, we're just getting to know Culber, and B, because, well, he's Latino and he's also part of a gay couple, and that becomes a thing where really you just killed off, you know, a person of color who was also you know, not straight, like, that doesn't necessarily look amazing on the surface of it. It doesn't necessarily look amazing. So as we, as probably if you're listening to this podcast, you also watch After Trek and things of that nature.
So in case you didn't,
yeah, like, so sorry, but here we go. They most definitely did some damage control on After Trek about this and said, well, you know, don't worry so much about this. Like, it was definitely in service of the plot. It was definitely because, you know, Culber's, you know, relationship to Stamets and all that kind of stuff. And then, of course, Wilson Cruz very nicely said, actually, I have some of the best acting I've ever done in my career coming up. Hint, hint. And people went, oh, yeah? And then they just straight up said, yeah, he's not 100% dead.
I mean, there's a really obvious solution to that, which I don't know. I don't watch After Trek, so I don't know if they mentioned it. But, I mean, presumably they're in a universe with another Dr. Culber, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So the funny part is it's not that, because they basically just said no to that, that they're not going to bother showing evil Culber. They actually like Culber being the good-hearted version so much that they didn't want to show what would obviously be a really twisted, like, you know, sadistic, like, weird scientist kind of person, you know, mad scientist kind of guy. So they didn't actually want to show him. What they do say is, go look at some of the crazy far out stuff about the mycelial network that the real Paul Stamets talks about how all life is intertwined with fungi and all this stuff. So they're pretty much saying that Stamets will kind of pull a Gary Mitchell-y thing and do some crazy stuff with his powers and resurrect his significant other.
Interesting. I mean,
that's basically what they said. And
magic,
so, okay.
Blood time.
Magic con blood, everybody.
Yeah, so that's kind of unfortunate. Yeah, that's kind of unfortunate in a way. Like, I don't know how. I mean, it's cool because I think Culver's death sucks that he's dead. Like, I mean, it was good the way they did it, but I think it sucks that he's dead.
I think the fact that it sucks that he's dead is part of why it makes it a good death.
Like, yeah, yeah,
I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was definitely good for the plot, absolutely. And so, but.
It was shocking.
It was.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. Even if you suspected something was going to happen. I remember sitting, you know, sitting on the couch with my husband, Andy, watching. And as soon as Culber and Stamets had that sort of sweet moment together where he comes down and they're really close and they're talking to each other. And he's like, you know, Culber's like, oh, I'll take care of you and stuff like that. Andy, I just look at Andy. He goes, oh, no. he's like something's about to happen.
His red shirt sense was tingling.
Mm-hmm. So even with that, like, you know, so I was expecting it to happen, and I audibly gasped and covered my mouth when it happened because of the way that they did it and the way it was shot and the way that that Lateef and Cruz played that scene. So yeah, I thought it was really effective for me.
So do we have anything else we really want to dig into with this episode?
Okay, there's one thing I wanted to draw attention to, was we had yet another first in Trek franchise. We had the first 90s sports film slow clap.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I could not believe they were doing the slow clap at the end. But
I know, and it was kind of unnecessary.
Yeah, I could have understood, like, more of a chant, right? Like, you know, when they say long live the emperor, empire, that kind of thing, with the Roman salute stuff. But instead, it's like the last 15 minutes of The Sandlot.
Well, and it's not, it didn't fit to me. I thought it was, I laughed when it happened in sort of a, that's cute, and move it on way. But, like, you know, the turbo lift doors open and Burnham's there having killed Connor, right? And he falls out on the bridge, and they all look up, and this is the, you know, in a typical film where they're doing the 90s sports clap, it's they do nothing for a couple seconds because you're waiting to hear what their reaction is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, uh-oh, what if their reaction is bad? But, like, why would they react badly? I don't know. I was like, of course they're going to be happy that their captain is back, who's like a hero. And they don't care that the current captain is dead, right?
No, right. They don't care at all. No,
so, like, I thought the sports clap, like, effect fell flat. Plus, it was funny.
They should totally do they totally should have done the Roman thing where they're like, oh, the captain is dead. Long live the captain.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, and they said long live the captain, or long live the emperor. Empire, I guess. But, like, yeah, I was thinking the same thing in my head. Yeah, the queen is dead. Long live the queen.
Mm-hmm. They totally should have done something like that, but oh well.
We did miss a rather large thing during the course of this podcast that we should be talking about now. There is a very large reference made to two other Star Trek shows. Maybe even foreshadowing something to come. Apparently, I don't even remember the plot. Matt, do you remember the exact plot element
with Defiant?
Relating to the Defiant?
Oh, you mean like how they find out about it in this episode?
Oh,
yeah.
They just like look it up and they're like, oh, we just heard that like there's this other ship.
Yeah, they're looking for ways to get back to their own time. And then they realized that the Defiant had come back like 150 years prior, thanks to the Tholian web shenanigans.
Right. Yeah. Right. So we find that out, and then a schematic of the ship comes up on the screen that is supposed to be the Defiant that we saw in the original series and in A Mirror Darkly. And it's a little different.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had no.
It has the basic outline of the Constitution class.
Yeah.
But it's clear that the support struts for the nacelles are different.
Mm-hmm. The saucers.
Looks like the saucer looks a little different, so it'll be interesting to see if that is simply because it's been hanging in the mirror universe for the past 100 years, or if that is a foreshadowing of whatever the Constitution class is going to look like in this Discovery timeline.
Well, as we know, they have an aesthetic that they have for starships now in Discovery, and it's different. So this looks a lot like little pieces, you know, different little pieces of like the Shenzo and some other stuff stuck on a Constitution class. So I'm not really surprised. I'm not surprised at all that they deviate from.
No, I'm not surprised. Yeah. I'm not surprised. It'll be interesting to see the reaction.
People are not going to be happy with it. Yeah, I'll tell you that.
The real thing will be if they beam to the bridge of the Defiant, because in the Enterprise episode, they clearly make it just a recreation of the NCC-1701, right? Same as when they had Scotty on the holodeck. But I don't think they're going to have like big dorky wooden buttons in a science fiction show in 2017.
Nope. I don't think they're going to show the interior.
Okay, well, that's probably a good idea.
I
don't even know if
we'll
see the Defiant. We may have seen we may have already seen all we're going to see of the Defiant. Mm.
We should put up a side by side comparison when we do the write up for this podcast on the website, showing what we saw in last night's episode and then the Defiant as we knew it before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. One of the hard problems is the Defiant's just this wireframe, you know, sort of overview of it. It's not shaded in at all, so we don't really know.
Sure, but like Brian was able to tick off, you know, a list of a few things that he noticed right away were definitely different. So I would be interested for one different. Just to see that side by side.
Oh, it's definitely different. The struts that hold up the nacelles are different. I mean,
yeah, there's like a weird thing poking out of the back of the secondary hull between the connection area between the secondary hull and the saucer. There's some weird thing sticking out there.
That's the second nacelle behind it. That's the top.
Is that what that is? Yeah. No, that's not it. Yeah. No, it's not.
There's a little wing on it.
Maybe you're right. It just looks a little
odd. It's not a great angle. Yeah.
No, it's not a good angle. Anyway, and it even looks like the primary hull is a little different. Mm-hmm. So
it's all been tweaked a little.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays, because eventually I assume we're going to see either the Defiant or the Enterprise or something like that.
Yeah, I don't think they can resist it, especially because we know that, I mean, there's that, the running scene with Tilly where straight up Burnham drops the Enterprise name, you know, like,
yeah,
they're gonna only be able to resist that for so long, I think.
Mm. Yeah, so we shall see. Anyway, how long do you guys think we're going to be in the Mirror Universe? Is it going to be for the rest of the season? Or is it going to be two or three episodes? What do you think?
My guess is three episodes.
Yeah, I was thinking
they're
going to
milk it for three.
How many more episodes are there in the season?
There are five more.
Five more.
Yeah, there's 15 total.
My question is, what would they do like for finale when they get back, right? If they've already, if they've already finished the Klingon War arc, you know, blown up the what's it called? Not scavenger ship. Come on. Sarcophagus ship.
Sarcophagus.
Yeah.
Though you'll note they didn't actually finish it because they never transmitted their their algorithm to detect cloaking.
Okay. That's right, because they disappear.
While they're having shenanigans in the universe, in the Prime universe, they're still getting their butts handed to them by cloaked vessels that they can't detect.
And by the way, Mirror Discovery is in Prime universe right now.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. Yeah. That's right. They transposed. So there's a Mirror Discovery running rampage.
So what I think they'll be in the Mirror universe. I think they'll be in the Mirror universe for the rest of the season, and then the finale will be Discovery v. Discovery.
Yeah, that could be for sure.
And what might happen in that battle is the spore drive is destroyed, and that's why we never had the spore drive again.
Well, why couldn't they just make a new one,
though? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da!
Well, also, why couldn't they, every time
something goes wrong, why couldn't they just slingshot around the sun? Right?
That too.
I think ultimately the human cost will be too great with the spore drive. And
that's undoubtedly.
It seems to be unstable.
Yeah, they could say this is too dangerous. We could invite invaders from another dimension to attack us.
Most definitely.
What if they somehow tried to actually tie it in with the Gary Mitchell thing and they go near the galactic barrier? And something happens to Stamets and he goes nuts. And then somehow, like, this ended up creating these espers that were able to go all Gary Mitchell and everything.
Yeah.
I don't think that happened.
Well, you got to remember.
Too much fan wanking, I think. But yeah.
No, but the esper thing, that happened on the USS Valiant. I forget how many years prior to where No Man Has Gone Before happened to. There was an early Starfleet ship called the Valiant that interacted with the barrier.
What if we see the Valiant? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's much earlier. I think the Valiant is like.
You think it's pre-Discovery?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, way
by
before.
Far.
Way before.
It's a very early Starfleet ship.
Like 70, 80 years prior.
I didn't realize it was that far before. Okay.
I can't remember.
I think the consensus is it's not long after the founding of the Federation. Like the Valiant is out there.
Yeah, they went out there and then
the same thing happened to their crew, back to the Gary Mitchell thing, though, they don't need the galactic barrier. He's already tripping way out and getting kind of superpowers from
his eyes
riding the mycelial network. And also the mycelial network, like, you don't need to be limited to the galactic barrier. He's obviously all over the place, regardless of any barrier.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
In his mind. So I don't think it matters.
It'll be interesting to see what ultimately happens to Stamets.
Yeah, that will be interesting.
It doesn't strike me as the kind of thing you can snap out of.
No.
Yeah, he's pretty deep in there.
He will forever be changed somehow, that's for sure.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Okay. Do we think we've covered it?
I think we have.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone who stayed with us till the end. This was a great episode, and there's a lot of stuff to talk about. So we appreciate you indulging us and for your fanship and your readership. And we will see you again with next episode, I guess. Just 1 week away.
Yes. Yes. Episode 11, The Wolf Inside.
Ooh.
Ominous.
So I don't know if we can really read anything into that.
Well,
but
Valk inside Tyler.
I guess so.
And also, you know, their mirror counterparts, right?
Right.
I think we can assume we'll meet the Mirror Universe future Jack the Ripper.
Does he sound like Piglet?
Evil Piglet with a goatee and a midriff.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And a midriff.
The ghost of John Fiedler will make an appearance.
That's how evil he is.
Yeah.
Oh, you heard it here first, guys.
That's right, guys.
Anyway.
Alrighty. Well, thanks for hanging with us, everybody, and we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.